What's going on, guys? Welcome back to the show.
Today, we are attempting to answer the question, is it okay to do something that you know is unsustainable to lose weight? And I'll start by saying right now, I started to make some notes for this and realized that there's just so much to talk about. And then towards the end, we can have a bit of a philosophical discussion about this question. I think once we attach all of the nuance and context to it, though, I think there are some, at least it, from my perspective, some succinct feelings that I have around this question. But I do think it's important for us to draw a bigger picture around this question without getting triggered, because triggered is a real weird word. I don't mean it like people are being triggered doesn't automatically mean the response that you have is an overreaction. I think good coaches, people with their heart in the right place, get triggered by the word unsustainable, by the word extreme. And I think that comes from a good place. It comes from the place of, I want the people that I work with to sustain the results that they get. And the words like extreme and unsustainable feel directly counter to that. But maybe they're not. Or maybe they're not inherently, or maybe they're not all the time. And so, yeah, I did a podcast with Martin McDonald recently on aggressive dieting strategies, essentially some of the upsides to taking, by utilizing a larger calorie deficit as a way of losing fat versus the conventional slow and steady diet on as many calories as you can rhetoric. And I got a lot of responses from people who were like, I don't know if I could even finish the podcast. It made me feel so uncomfortable. Like the idea that doing something more aggressively might actually have physiological benefits just goes against the very common, sentiment on social media of go slow, go steady, small incremental changes. And I'm not poo-pooing that sentiment. I think that on average, that's how I feel. I think if somebody was like, hey, somebody came up to me and they're like, hey, should I do this, this special diet to lose weight, even though I'm not going to sustain it for very long and I don't want to live like this afterwards. Like, my knee jerk is to be like, yeah, that's dumb. But I think there's room for drawing a more nuanced picture here. And so whether you listen to that podcast or not, I think Martin is one of the smartest dudes in the industry. And there is, you know, we talked about a lot of studies in that podcast, and over the following days, I pulled up all those studies and read them front to back, and it is intriguing stuff. Physiologically, the potential benefits of dieting more quickly. Physiologically, humans are complex, behaviors are complicated, psychology is complicated, and so the idea of like, hey, we just do what might seem physiologically like a better idea is not the only consideration. So remember, when we're talking about this, our goal is to ultimately help people the most. Like, that's what we're trying to do here. We're not trying to be right. We're not trying to argue for arguing's sake. Like, my podcast, my goals, what I do, what I'm here for on this earth is to help people the most, period. And I think this is an important question to ask, because I think we can very quickly marry ourselves to one ethos, one methodology of, you know, slow and steady for everyone all the time, you know, slow incremental changes for everyone all the time. And I think when you do the for everyone all the time, you probably will miss out on helping the most people. And so I think it's important to be open-minded, but let's go through this. I promise I will try and synthesize all of these thoughts towards the end. I will say we're about to dive into a lot of different thoughts that are intertwined in a lot of ways. They're almost like individual statements that I think it's almost like you have a blank canvas and you have like a face on that blank canvas. And what I want to do is I want to kind of draw the whole picture around it and then see what it looks like afterwards. So some initial thoughts. Let's reiterate the question. The question is it okay to do something that you know is unsustainable to lose weight? And there are some initial thoughts. If you just look at that sentence, what does okay mean? Like, you know, is it okay to do something that you know is unsustainable to lose? What is okay? You know, what would make something not okay? Even if somebody did something unsustainable and, you know, maintained some of the weight loss but gained some back, is that okay? If they gained all the weight loss or that weight that they lost, but, you know, learned a lot. Is that okay? You know, what does okay mean? What does unsustainable mean? Right? What does it mean to sustain something? How much of something does one have to sustain for it to be a good tool? How long does one have to sustain it, right? How long do I have to keep doing something, and in what magnitude do I need to keep doing it for this to ultimately check a box of sustainability and to ultimately be worth it? And what does success look like for this person we're talking about? What are their goals? And I think that that's the first place that my mind went, like, maybe you aren't trying to sustain it or all of it, right? Maybe you're a bodybuilder, right? That they're doing certain protocols that are not meant to be sustained long-term. They're meant to be sustained for the time they need to be sustained for the outcome that they're looking for. You know, you might be prepping for a photo shoot or just trying to lose weight for vacation, or you have extreme health concerns, right? You have really, 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 really high blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammatory markers, and you need an extreme approach to get you into a place of metabolic health as quickly as possible. And sustaining this is almost secondary because your health's on the line, right? Maybe you're somebody who's okay losing 40 pounds in a way that feels really productive, but because it wasn't a strategy that really taught you how to live afterwards, you gained 20 pounds back afterwards. Well, you still lost 20 pounds. You lost and then maintained. You lost 40, gained 20, and you maintained 20. Is that success? I do think that for the remainder of this episode, we're going to be discussing within the context of somebody who is trying to sustain as much of the fat loss as possible. You know, I don't want to spend too much time on the, like, what kind of strategies people use to do a bodybuilding show or a vacation or a photo shoot. It's not really where my heart is, and that's not really something I'm interested in or the kind of clientele and population that I work with. So we are going to, from here on, talk about people who are actually trying to, let's say, lose fat and keep it off, right? There's a very general kind of singular statement. The next thought is that all deficits are unsustainable, in air quotes, right? Like, all deficits are not meant to be sustained. The actual energy deficit is not something that you're trying to keep up forever, right? In order to eat less than your body needs or eat less than you would ideally want, it's going to require some changes that you likely won't have to make forever, right? Like, you know, no matter what, if I eat 500 calories less than my maintenance, I'm going to have behaviors that change in order to help me sustain that. So no matter what, my deficit is going to involve behaviors in some way that I don't have to do for the long term with 500 more calories. You know, you can't be in a deficit forever. So the entire context of fat loss is unsustainable. You are not trying to sustain the deficit. So I think that there's something to think about there. And we're going to dive into that a little bit more. And so when we look at the question again, if we start with that question of is it okay to do something you know is unsustainable? I think, to be fair, without additional context, the answer is technically yes, right? If you just ask somebody, is it okay to do something that you know is unsustainable to lose weight? The assumption is that if you're going to do something during fat loss that you can't see yourself doing for the very long term, that you're going to, you know, screw it up. And I think that that can't be inherently true. Stay with me here. Like, in theory, can you do low carb to lose weight and then transition to a more balanced diet thereafter and be really successful maintaining weight loss? Absolutely. Absolutely. Can you intermittent fast during your deficit periods, but go back to eating breakfast during your maintenance periods? Absolutely. Can you do what's called calorie cycling, where you eat a little bit more on some days and eat a little bit less on other days during your calorie deficit in order to make that, you know, potentially more enjoyable for you, but then go back to more of a static calorie, kind of same day calorie intake approach at maintenance? So where do we draw the line? Like, what is unsustainable? You know, I think by now, with those examples, everybody is thinking, okay, yeah. So yes, you can do stuff during fat loss that you might not do forever at maintenance. Right? I think that we all have to agree that with that. People, like, can you do low carb and then transition to a more balanced diet? Absolutely. Can you intermittent fast and then go back to eating breakfast at maintenance for the long term? Absolutely. Can you calorie cycle? And those are just three examples. There are many. There are so many. Can you go, you know, can you make adjustments to, like, certain food swaps? Can you, I go to eat, you know, fat-free dairy and leaner cuts of protein, and I swap out my white rice for cauliflower rice, but at long-term at maintenance when I have more calories, I might not do that at least in the magnitude I'm doing it right now. So where do we draw the line, and how much can you change in the pursuit of fat loss, right? How much stuff that you knowingly don't want to do forever can you do / should you do to lose fat, right? I think, so after having those thoughts, the next is it the case that on average, right, I'm going to keep just playing devil's advocate with myself, right? I think it is technically true that you can do stuff to lose fat that you don't feel like doing forever without that being like a red flag or like a big no-no. But is it the case that on average, the more your strategies, lifestyle, and habits, your eating habits in particular, during fat loss mirror those that you will have or would like to have during the weight maintenance period, that you will have a better chance to sustain your weight loss / an easier transition from fat loss to maintenance? The answer is yes. And the image that I'm thinking of in my head is if you have like a dot, and that dot is just a blank black dot on a white page, and that's how you want to live your life at maintenance. And you draw another dot along a continuum, right? The continuum's going to the left. It's like a line graph here. Like a spectrum here. The further you move from that black dot, the further your life, your lifestyle and habits go from where you'd ultimately like them to be, I think it's fair to say that you're making the transition back to that place more challenging, right? I think that that's fair. If you eat a ketogenic diet to lose weight, you're setting yourself up for a more challenging experience if your goal is to ultimately transition back to a balanced diet. If you're eating a balanced diet and then you eat a balanced diet to lose fat, there's likely less things you need to change to go back to eating at maintenance and have more of like the lifestyle that you're looking to have for the long term. So I think it is true on average that the less things you change, the easier the transition back to maintenance will be. And the more you change, the further you deviate from what your life is going to look like or what you would like it to look like at maintenance in the pursuit of fat loss, the harder that transition will be. That, I think that's totally true, right? Right? The more you change to lose fat, the harder it is to transition to the forever side of things. The less you change, the less you have to change to go to your forever, right? Your forever lifestyle. But does that mean that the absolute best strategy for everyone is to eat exactly the same foods and just shrink portions by 30%, right? And I'm making up 30%. That's a random, you know, size of a deficit that we can use. That's on like the moderate to high end of a deficit size. Like if you think that you take that dot and you should not traverse along the spectrum at all, you should try and eat exactly like you want to at maintenance, just less. I don't know if that's how people, you know, should do this. Like, what if during fat loss, instead of having 30, like, imagine you listed out all the food you eat across the week at maintenance, and we just took all of those portions and reduced them by 30%, and that's exactly what you do to lose fat. I'm not sure that's the best strategy. Like, what if during fat loss, instead of having 30% less alcohol, you choose to have none? Or instead of 30% less ice cream, you choose to have none? Or again, instead of 30% less rice, you choose to switch to cauliflower? Or instead of having breakfast, you choose to intermittent fast? Like, where do we draw the line of you've gone too far and created a challenge in terms of transitioning back to maintenance that's not worth it, right? / kind of set yourself up for failure insofar as transitioning to your long-term lifestyle. It's tricky. It's not straightforward. Where is the line of, oh, nope, now you're doing unsustainable shit? It's like, well, you know, the deficit itself isn't meant to be sustained. It's only 12 weeks. It's only 8 weeks. It's only 20 weeks. It's only 6 months. It's only 1 year. Like, where do we draw the line of what sustainable is? And could the juice still be worth the squeeze? Could it be that doing things to optimize your ability to lose fat, even if it creates a challenge of transitioning back to maintenance, could be a better strategy for some people? I think you have to say it could be. It could be sometimes for some people, definitely, right? Is it possible that making, the question is it possible to make big changes to lose fat that you won't sustain forever and ultimately still be successful? It absolutely is. You know, we see in the research that making big, listen, I'm gonna do like a little bit of a steel man red team, devil's advocate here, but we see in a lot of research, and at least three papers, I'm going to go through one of them really quickly here, that making bigger changes and having people lose more weight initially faster doesn't actually, like what you would expect, what everyone's expecting when we have people lose weight really quickly is that you have a higher dropout rate in the study in that group where people are in a very low calorie diet or have a very extreme diet, that they drop out more. That's what you'd expect. You'd also expect them to lose weight more quickly, but have a higher likelihood or statistics of weight regain, right? You'd have to say, okay, the people who lose weight more aggressively haven't set themselves up for maintenance afterwards are more likely to regain more weight, right? So you'd expect them to not be able to sustain the weight loss. You'd expect them to have a worse chance at sustaining the weight loss. And that's just not what we see, actually. There's a study, Knackers et al. In 2010. The title is The Association Between Rate of Initial Weight Loss and Long-Term Success in Obesity Treatment. Does Slow and Steady Win the Race? And again, we're talking about overweight and obese populations here. I'll read you, basically what they did is they had three groups. They had a fast weight loss group, a moderate weight loss group, and a slow weight loss group. There was a six-month lifestyle intervention followed by a 1 year of extended care so that they could kind of check up on people a year after the study was over. And I'll read the conclusion. Actually, we'll talk about it. So the fast weight loss group, are we in kilograms here or are we in pounds? I think we're in kilograms. Holy crap. Or is that percent weight loss? Let's say that this was... Okay, gotcha. It's percent weight loss. So the fast fat loss group lost 13.5% of their weight over the six-month period. The moderate weight loss lost about 9 pounds over the six-month period. And the slow weight loss group... these are kilograms. Holy crap. This is a lot of weight loss. 13.5 kilograms, 9 kilograms. And then the slow group lost 5 kilograms. And what you'd expect is like, okay, cool, the fast group lost more weight, but they probably regained it, and, you know, at the end of the study, the slow group won, you know? And that's not what we saw. We saw no increase in dropout rate in the fast group. So the people that were dieting way more aggressively did not see a greater dropout. And what's interesting about the study is they stopped the groups at the point in which they lost about 10%. If you lost 10% of your body weight, they stopped and they put you at maintenance. So what ended up happening is the fast weight loss group lost that much weight in about 3 months, and then they were at maintenance more quickly. So they lost all of the weight that they were had a goal to lose in the study the most quickly, and then they got back to maintenance the most quickly. And their conclusion was, do we want to get to the end conclusion here? So there was no significant group differences in weight regain between 6 and 18 months. So the fast fat loss group lost more weight, did it more quickly, and did not see an increase in weight regain in the 12 months after the study, right? The fast and the moderate group were 2.7 times more likely to achieve 10% weight loss at 18 months than the slow group. So basically, if you were in the fast fat loss group, 18 months after the study started, you were 5 times more likely to still have 10% weight lost. And 10% weight loss is an important number, as it is a number we see really brings a lot of health benefits. So you were 5 times more likely to have maintained 10% weight loss after 18 months in the fast group. Their conclusion, collectively, findings indicate both short and long-term advantages to fast initial weight loss. Fast weight loss losers obtained greater weight reduction and long-term maintenance, and were not more susceptible to weight regain than gradual weight losers. Now, I'm not putting all of my eggs in this basket of, oh, we got to diet people aggressively. Everybody should. I'm not doing that. Not even close. It's certainly not. I think physiologically, faster fat loss, more extreme protocols are interesting in some contexts. But human beings are complicated. Behavior is complicated. Relationship with food is complicated. I'm not on this, we got to diet everybody aggressively train. I promise you, I'm not. There's people out there that get so uncomfortable by this conversation, they don't even want to hear about it. They don't even want to hear that actually getting your client's initial weight loss in the beginning does not actually set them up for more rebounding. Again, physiologically speaking, depending on the guidance and support they're receiving, that initial weight loss might actually be a greater predictor of weight loss maintenance than anything else. And that could come from the motivation, that could come from physiological advantages, that could come from the idea that, oh, these people only had to diet for 3 months instead of 6 months and doing it more quickly and getting back to maintenance felt psychologically more palatable. So there's so much going on here. This is not me pitching you everyone should do something aggressive. That's not the case. But you should know that if you think in the research, slow and steady wins the race categorically, it sure as shit does not. It does not. Making big changes, ironically, for a lot of people, leads to a greater amount of sustained changes. And again, I'm not pitching that for everyone. I work with people one-on-one all the time, and I know that this is more complicated than that on an individual level. But I can't shun that research either, especially in overweight and obese populations. So let's keep going. Does knowing that a certain thing and strategy you're doing is not sustainable, does that make a difference? Does knowing that it's unsustainable and doing it anyway, as opposed to like, I might keep this up, who knows? I think it does matter. I think if you know, hey, I'm going to go low carb because I feel really satiated when I go low carb in fat loss. But when I, you know, air quote, reverse diet back to maintenance, I really do like having a little bit more carbs in my life at maintenance. But for fat loss, when I bring carbs down, that is when I'm most successful. Yeah. Well, who am I going to, does that sound crazy? I don't think that sounds crazy, right? I think if you are going into it knowing that this is unsustainable, I think that can enhance your likelihood of transitioning. If you're going keto and you're like, I don't know if I'll keep this up. Who knows? Who knows what I'm going to do afterwards? I think that's a less good strategy. I think if you're going into something and you're making whatever, I just think on average, making conscious, informed decisions for oneself will lead to a better outcome. My dogs are going crazy in the background. Does more extreme dieting / extreme approaches negatively impact people's relationship with food? And this is one that I'm sure a lot of people, all the coaches listening to this podcast have been waiting for me to say. What's the people in that study, what's their relationship with food like? And maybe they gain more weight after year one. Maybe it's year two, year three, year four, year five, and eventually things level off. We don't know. That's a fair point. So does more extreme dieting or more extreme approaches, like more shifting of dietary pattern, negatively impact someone's relationship with food? And I think, you know, maybe. And it's definitely something we don't want to do. We don't want to go low carb and demonize carbohydrates to the point where, you know, that transition back to maintenance is challenging because we are bringing with it this relationship with carbohydrates that isn't super healthy, right? You know, I think definitely for those going at this alone and those who don't have good lifestyle habits at baseline, I wouldn't do any more extreme dieting. I wouldn't do large deficits. I wouldn't do big swings in dietary pattern. If you're going at this alone and you don't have, if you're not like a nutrition professional, you don't have a lot of education and knowledge in this space, you don't have a lot of good lifestyle habits at baseline, you don't have a really, really good relationship with food and body, then I would not do more extreme approaches. I would not make bigger swings in dietary pattern. I don't think that's a scenario in which I'm betting that the average person who's going at it alone without a lot of nutrition knowledge, without the best relationship with food, is going to be successful doing something radical to lose weight and then transition back to maintenance and sustain it, right? Like the question that people were like, that a couple people asked me were like, well, how is this different than yo-yo dieting? You know, like, and that's a question that I have so many counter questions to, like what classifies yo-yo dieting? And so when you think about yo-yo dieting, you think about somebody losing weight very fast and then gaining it back and losing weight very fast and then gaining that weight back. I want you to just stay with me for a second. You have somebody who's losing weight very quickly, presumably with an extreme approach. Let's say they do fucking Optavia or they do keto or they go carnivore and they lose a bunch of weight and then they gain it all back. And they've done this, you know, every 3 years for the last 20 years. Are they yo-yo dieting because of that extreme approach? Is that extreme approach the cause of their yo-yo dieting? Or is it the lack of fundamental habits at baseline? Or is it the lack of guidance and support? Is it all of the above? Right? When you think about somebody yo-yo dieting, a lot of people will say, yeah, people are yo-yo dieting because they're doing a lot of extreme shit. Maybe. I tend to think people are yo-yo dieting because they don't have any good foundational, healthy lifestyle habits at baseline. I don't necessarily, and it's more complicated than this, and you don't have to pick just one. They are intertwined, right? They're totally intertwined. But I look at yo-yo dieting and I'm like, yeah, people are losing and regaining a bunch of weight because they aren't doing the foundational big rock healthy lifestyle habits at baseline. Not because the carnivore diet messes up their metabolism, right? It's complicated. You could say that they yo-yo diet because when they go keto, they develop an unhealthy relationship with carbohydrates. When they do fasting, they start to begin having a little bit of a fear of eating more often throughout the day. Totally. I think that it's complicated. Totally. But I'm not looking at our inability to lose weight and thinking like, yeah, it's because people are doing a bunch of extreme shit. I think if they didn't do that, that would lead to a better outcome. But instead of fighting that battle, I want to fight the, let's get a lot of these foundational healthy habits at baseline. If you can focus on eating a lot of plants, fiber, fruits, vegetables, beans, whole grains, seeds, enough protein, eating balanced meals, you know, getting exercise in check, sleep, stress management, all that big rock boring stuff, I think that is the bigger ROI place for our coaches to put effort, right? I'm not like, yes, I think also people who are unsupported with no nutritional knowledge, bad relationship with food already, not a great relationship with their body, doing carnivore diet, doing keto diet, doing Optavia, doing whatever, doing, you know, 3-day fasts, I think, yeah, that's a bad plan. But I think that I'm less harping on that being a bad plan, more harping on the, yeah, but like before you did that carnivore diet, your life was a shit show and you have not fixed that. And that is the thing you need to fix. So yeah. So let's quickly summarize. I know that we kind of went around the bend there. Let's summarize quickly here. And then we'll talk about what I actually think about all this in the context of working with real people who want to get healthier. So it's absolutely possible to make changes to your life, to create a deficit and lose fat that you don't want to keep up in their entirety forever and still ultimately be successful in sustaining weight loss results. I think that intellectually speaking, just philosophically speaking, hypothetically speaking, you don't need to live exactly the same life that you're trying to live at maintenance, just everything reduced by 30%. Right? You don't take your food log and say, I'm eating exactly these foods, but 30% less. In these exact portions, 30% less. It's okay to make some behavior changes, some swaps, some meal pattern swaps, you know, like those things are okay inherently, right? Right? You could do intermittent fasting to lose weight and not want to do it forever. You could do low carb to lose weight and not want to do it forever. You could do calorie cycling and not want to do it forever. You could even do a little bit more cardio and not want to do it forever. You can engage in some form of abstinence that you don't want to keep up forever. All right? I'm not suggesting you do more unsustainable stuff or more stuff that you don't want to do, but I'm just saying intellectually, you can't say that it must be exactly the life that you're living, just 30% less. That said, I think it's fair to say that the further you deviate from where your life is going to be, where you want it to be, the more challenging that transition will be on average. And the more important it is that you have lifestyle established beforehand, that you practice it during, and that you have a plan for after. Like, if you're going to deviate further from the life that you want to live at maintenance, it becomes more important that you have that life at maintenance in check already. And the way you do that is you establish it beforehand. You go into your dieting phase in a really good place, having those habits mostly in check. You practice it maybe during your diet through, you know, refeeds, diet breaks, little vacations, throughout the dieting phase to make sure you're, you know, still just in touch with those foundational habits that and what that lifestyle will ultimately look like with a little bit more food, and that you have a plan for afterwards, that you have a, you know, I talk a lot of, you know, smack about the lack of a metabolic advantage to reverse dieting. But if we just use the term reverse dieting as the process of going from your deficit to your new maintenance, you should have a plan for that. And it should be based in these lifestyle habits that you have established already at baseline pre-fat loss. And that becomes more important if you're going to deviate from those things more in an attempt to lose fat. I feel intrigued by a lot of this stuff as somebody who does have a lot of those good lifestyle habits in check. You know, would it behoove me to go a little faster? Would it behoove me to make more changes because I'm at less risk for failing the return to maintenance part of this equation, right? So it's an interesting thought. I think that brings me to feeling that this idea of change, I think I'm feeling a little bit like, hey, change as little as you need to get the results you want. But I think that that implication is that you won't make any big changes. I think that is not true. Change as little as you need to get the results that you want. Don't go keto if you don't have to, right? Don't go mega low carb if you don't feel like that's the best strategy, if you could do this with a more moderate approach. If you're having great success with a slower fat loss, like, you don't need to change that. But I think go change as little as you need to get the results you want is something I would nod along with, but only because there is an implication that you still might change a lot if that is what's best for you. So what now? I'll try and close this down in the next 10 minutes here. I don't want to go too long in the tooth here, but so what now? What after all of this philosophical waffling back and forth, trying to add some context to this, what do I actually think about all this discussion of, you know, when it comes to working with individuals, real people in the real world who want to get healthier? I would say, on average, most people do not have the sort of lifestyle habits in check in the way they would need to successfully utilize more extreme approaches, right? I think most people in this world don't have the dietary pattern, the nutrition knowledge, the guidance, the exercise routine, the relationship of food and body to utilize a more extreme approach. Some people do, but I'd say on average, people don't. So do that first, regardless of what strategy you want to lose weight. I'll get to that kind of at the end, but like, that's where my head's at right now, is like, what this makes me feel is it's so important to focus on healthy lifestyle habits. Healthy lifestyle habits: get in your bed for at least 8 hours, eat a lot of plants, hit your fiber numbers, eat enough protein, lift weights, go for more walks, get outside in the sunshine, you know, have some sort of stress management habits. It's so important to do those things because it's going to make you more successful losing weight and keeping it off, regardless, like losing weight, keeping it off. It's going to make everything better. And I think we're maybe spending too much time. I don't know. I don't want to get over the top about this, but the more I talk about like the way people lose fat, the more I think that's less important than the way people live. What lifestyle habits do you have in check now? I definitely wouldn't do anything on the more aggressive, unsustainable side without the guidance of a professional and without these lifestyle habits in check. If you have a lot of these lifestyle habits in check and you're in the guidance of a professional, right? If you and you want to do something a little bit more extreme, I think you have a higher likelihood of finding that route successful than you do if you don't have one of those things, right? And if you want to do intermittent fasting or calorie cycling or low carb or more cardio or omitting certain foods or behaviors, yeah, you can be successful doing all those things even if you don't want to do them forever. But I think you have to have a lot of those big rock forever habits in check first. I do think you should deviate as little as possible to get the results you want, but that sentence does not say how much you should change, only that if you can change less and see similar results, that probably bodes well long-term. I've had clients lose weight on shorter, more aggressive diets with refeeds and diet breaks with like 800 to 1,000 calories and transition back to a life closer to 2,000 calories and go on and crush it. I'm thinking of several people at this point who have gone a more aggressive route and seen great success. I've had clients utilize protein sparing modified fasts where you have 1 or 2 days out of the week where you eat, 800 to 1,000 calories of basically only protein sparing modified fast. And I've had them crush it. I've had other clients do a really low carb approach, right? And then transition to eating more carbs for long term and crush it. I've had other people do some of that unsustainable stuff, specifically intermittent fasting, where they're like, hey, let's do intermittent fasting while I lose weight. I think that works really well, but it ends up not being something that transitions really well back to eating breakfast, and it kind of makes things a little bit more complicated. And I've had people do really well with that. I would say that if I think about the clients who had success losing weight, the greatest single contributing factor to their long-term success is what life looked like going into the fat loss phase. I think there are a lot of factors that go into somebody's percent to, likelihood to have a successful fat loss maintenance But one of them is, and I'd say the most important one is what your life looked like going into it. And so, you know, all of this discussion of how people go about losing weight feels secondary, very important, but secondary to what sorts of big rock lifestyle habits you have going into that. And so if you listen to that pod with Martin, which I think is super intriguing, it's super intellectually stimulating. There, I put all of the research links in the description if you want to go through and read them. There's a lot of interesting stuff about a lack of increase in hunger in larger deficits, you know, with enough protein and resistance training, a lack of lean body mass lost, you know, greater amount of actual sustained weight loss with the people who go more aggressive, no metabolic disadvantage. It's not like, oh, I'm, you know, people talk about if you lose weight too fast, your body will adapt and it will have nowhere to go. That's not really a thing. And so breaking the mold of like, oh, aggressive dieting is bad for your metabolism, it's bad for your physiology, you know, making big changes means you're not going to sustain it. It's like, I think on average, those sentiments are, you know, probably get more right than they get wrong, but they are too absolute. Even as like, even with people with good hearts and who want to do good, that's still too much on the absolute side for me. But at the end of the day, like when, the feeling I'm left with sitting here after painting this entire picture is that it's just that much more important to help people establish those really healthful lifestyle habits that are going to help them no matter what they choose to do, right? Building balanced meals, having a meal pattern, you know, when you eat in a given day, that's something, you know, relatively consistent on a day-to-day basis. Eating lots of plants, enough fiber, plenty of protein, mostly minimally processed foods, cooking more, walking more, lifting weights, sleeping more, managing stress, right? Even if they don't pursue intentional weight change, this stuff is just so important. That's, you know, it either will cause weight loss on its own or it will make any pursuit of intentional weight loss easier on the back end, no matter what strategy that you choose to use. And I'll end with another kind of just ode to some triggered feelings. If you've been feeling triggered listening to this podcast and the Martin one, you know, these discussions about doing more extreme, and when I say triggered, I just mean like you have these like kind of squirrely feelings that are coming up of like, oh, this goes against my, you know, what I thought, how I feel about what people should do. And, you know, this idea of like slow, sustainable changes are the best. If it's bringing up some weird feelings, you know, that's probably coming from a good place. It's probably coming from a place inside of you that wants to help people make lasting changes. And that is good. That is good. You are a good coach and a good person for wanting that. We should do that. But I do think many, you know, sometimes we marry ourselves to everything moderate is always best. And I think that that's, again, on average, not, you know, it's probably not doing a ton of harm, but it's not doing the most good. And I think, I don't want to sound like this is me having everything figured out. I hope that that's not what it sounded like. I'm learning every day. I'm learning every day, just trying to do best by people on a grand scale, from my followers on social media to individual people I work with, making sure that they get, that I help them use nutrition and fitness to help them live the most fulfilling life. And sometimes that means fat loss can be a part of that. And sometimes that means more aggressive approaches, less aggressive approaches. You know, the physiology side is less complicated than the behavioral side. Like I was saying to somebody the other day, that the physiology is pretty simple, but people are complicated. And that is how I feel about this. Like, I think the physiology isn't that complicated. I think we know a lot about weight loss, fat loss, metabolism, metabolic adaptation. But people and behaviors, you know, living in a society is complicated. Maybe this was thought-provoking. If you want to shoot the shit about it, shoot me a DM. We can always chat about it. Maybe we'll have a follow-up episode in the future on this topic, all right? I'll see you guys in the next episode. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Where Optimal Meets Practical. If you liked the episode, it would mean the world to me if you posted a screenshot to your social media or left a 5-star review on iTunes. That stuff really helps. If you ever want to get in touch with me, just shoot me a DM on Instagram, @JordanLipsFitness. I'm always around to chat. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.